Hello and welcome to the Ship.Energy podcast. My name is Mark Williams and this is a special podcast for us. It's the last of 2020, so season's greetings to all of our listeners out there, wherever you are, and we hope that you have a safe and peaceful Christmas. But before you go away to relax into your armchair with your mince pies and mulled wine, we have a very special guest for you this week. Our guest this week is Alexander Panagopoulos, the founder and CEO of Project Forward. And if you don't know about Project Forward, this is a great opportunity for you to spend 25 minutes or so learning all about it. Mr. Panagopoulos was also the founder and chairman of Arista Group and Arista Shipping and the co-founder of Superfast Ferries, of which he was also president and CEO from 1993 to 2007. He was also the CEO, vice chairman of Attica Group, a listed entity, and senior executive at Blue Star Ferries. He comes from a shipping family. His father, Pericles, founded Royal Cruise Line in 1972, where Alex became fond of the sea and the avid skipper that he is today. Forward Shipping is an interesting project, and we'll learn much more about it from Alex himself, but effectively it is a way of developing LNG-powered vessels in all the different commodity classes. And this is a big step forward for the energy transition from our perspective. So we're delighted to have Alex as our guest today. Welcome, Alex.
Thank you, Mark. It's a great pleasure to be here today. I'm not sure if, bidding farewell to 2020 is the best thing to do, but at least we can bid farewell and get the hell out of this 2020 horrible year.
Yeah, we have a lot to look forward to, so let's focus with that. Well, Alex, I've been watching the progress of this project with interest for a few years now. So I guess the first question is, when did you personally take the decision that investing in LNG fuel ships was the way forward?
Well, it's a little bit of a long story, but I'll try to make it as short as possible. I co-founded Superfast Ferries back in 93, which grew from two ships to a fleet of 27 ships in less than 7 years from the first day of operation, spanning all of Europe, a gigantic feat by any measure. The vertical expansion was all on the basis of speed and quality, and for this, under my command, we built 17 new buildings, managing an order book of 1.5 billion euro. Speed required massive power plants on our ships. For example, each of our superfast ferries had an installed power of between 60 to 70 megawatts. What this meant was dizzying amounts of gas-guzzling emissions, some 140,000 tons of CO2 emissions per ship per year, and corresponding volumes of SOx, NOx, and of course particulate matter out of the approximate 120 tons of unscrubbed back then raw HFO that we were burning per ship per day. Immense in any way and form. So when I launched Superfast Baltic Sea service between Finland, Sweden, and Germany back in 2000, I was acutely aware of the Nordic environmental sensitivities. I had spent almost 2 years in Denmark as a kid, growing up in the mid-70s, and had become fond of the progressive Nordic stance on the environment. And of course, you know, not only at those times, I mean, mid-70s, can you imagine what the time to be a kid? You know that. The Baltic is a truly shallow lake of sorts, where everything that happens in the sky has an immediately measurable impact in the brackish seawater. It is a very sensitive and punishing ecosystem. So with Wärtsilä and the Helsinki Polytechnic, we worked on testing what would be eventually the early versions of emissions abatement technology, what we know very well today. First on one of the engines of our ships, then we gave them the whole ship to play with. And this had a huge impact on accelerating our learning curve. It was during that time with Superfast in the Baltic that I started learning how poisonous was the stuff that we were emitting. All this horrible smoke. I started feeling very uncomfortable breathing in ports and near ships, even our ships. As I said earlier, before the show, I grew up with a mild asthma. And as I was a rebel wearing only a t-shirt on a motorcycle in the middle of winter, got two pneumonias. So I was very sensitive with breathing and still am. So that was when I knew that this new frontier of emissions would be the new battleground. So fast forward to 2013, and that was when I launched Project Forward. LNG was not the apparent solution for shipping. People weren't at all aware of what LNG stood for, as a matter of fact. Little did we know but that at that time we became the ambassadors of LNG in shipping, helping accelerate its adoption as a fuel choice. And Project Forward, a research project I led through our dry bulk company, Arista Shipping, and involving APS, the Classification Society, Delta Marine, the designer, the ship designer, the engine maker, Wärtsilä, the containment system specialist, GTT, the automation specialist, Eniram, and of course, very importantly, Shell, focused on developing the first LNG-powered bulk carrier for global trading. And in 2018, a letter of intent for up to 20 Kamsarmax bulk carrier new buildings was inked with the Chinese shipbuilder Yangzi Yang. As we sought chartering support and finance for the entire series. This did not materialize, and in retrospect, I see this as a success. The feedback we received in the meantime helped us carve and evolve the design to a materially improved one. And now I think on, and not ahead of time this time, on time, we're ready to proceed with the one super improved prototype. The yards are receptive and inviting. Some, of course, as we know, desperate for orders. And everyone is more informed about those funny things that we were talking about in the beginning, such as ESG, stricter rules coming, environmental conscience, and so on and so forth.
Yes, of course. I guess the case for LNG as a marine fuel had to wait until there were sufficient quantities of LNG available to be marine fuel, because in the first 40, 50 years of the LNG industry, most of the molecules were already subscribed. You know, they were all on sale and purchase agreements for use for power companies. And there wasn't any LNG available. It was all being sold on multi-decade or multi-year contracts. I guess now about a third of global LNG output is available on short-term contracts. And so we have a developing spot market for LNG tankers and a nascent futures market for LNG molecules themselves. So I suppose in a way the cart had to wait for the horse, or the horse had to wait for the cart. Until that LNG was available to be used as a marine fuel, although the technology was there, the marketplace wasn't. So I guess the engine manufacturers might say, yes, we could have built an LNG engine 60 years ago, but we couldn't source the LNG to do it. So I was wondering from when you got this project off the ground, you know, as far ago as 2013, when there wasn't really an LNG fueling infrastructure, how easy was it at that point to go around to the engine manufacturers or the class societies or the fuel systems makers and get them on board? I mean, was it a case of they were beating down your door, competing for your partnership, or was there an element of evangelism?
Yeah. Well, there was perhaps an element of evangelism in that sense. We were ahead of the curve, way ahead of the curve, as a matter of fact. But ABS enthusiastically embraced our project and, in fact, helped us enormously by allocating resources in Piraeus, Houston, and elsewhere. And its chairman, Chris Wernicke, immediately grasped what we were doing. Wärtsilä, they had developed already an engine, a wonderful engine, and immediately became the cornerstone on which the project was based. In fact, had it not been for their awesome, record-breaking dual-fuel 31 engine, our design would not have managed its achievements. Thanks also to Lars Anderson, Johnny Kakur, Frank Hartefeld, and others for becoming part of the Project Forward family. And then the part of our project, the fuel of our project, literally Shell, and its incredible conviction and support of our project, as they adopted us as their pet project. Thanks to Laurent Vetements, Arjen Stavas, Didier Demps, and others in their organization, we had incredible support. Shell came last. I knocked on a couple of other doors first. Namely some of the partners that we had at Attica in the past, but they were too busy with their own issues. So while we didn't have a working relationship with Shell, we quickly became friends.
They are the gas leaders. They're the right people to partner with, I suppose.
Exactly.
Yeah. So
in fact, I was a speaker at a conference, and I didn't know that they were at the audience, and they then approached us. They said, you know, we should be working together. And said, absolutely. I just didn't know where to go, who to knock, you know, whose door to knock.
I think you've just made every conference producer in the world very happy, because they'll say, see, there is the reason why everyone should attend conferences, for the networking opportunities, if not for the papers indeed that you listen to. So.
Correct. So there you go. That's real proof.
The Ship.Energy sponsors PetroSpot, who organize a number of conferences like Aracon and Maritime Week Americas and London International Shipping Week. We'll be very happy to hear that. So quick plug.
Yeah, we just need this bloody COVID to get out of the way.
We do. Let's get down to the nitty-gritty of these ships. You have LNG fuel designs for a number of different ship types, don't you? Can you tell us something about what is generic to those ship designs?
So different types of ships, yes. We do have different designs, and each one of them we have taken a very good personal look at the different requirements. The one that we started our project with was a Kamsarmax design that we developed all the way from scratch. Ourselves. And well, one of the differences that the crew will perhaps notice immediately would be that, for starters, they will be able to breathe better, especially in port when they're stationary and you don't have the relative speed of wind speed. So but otherwise, the list is great, and essentially, all these ship designs take elements of our patented engine room configuration, which calls for two engines coupled with a reduction gear and PTO and PTI, power takeoff and power take-in, variable RPM, and variable pitch propeller, which effectively what it does is it really maximizes the operating efficiency of the power speed curve. So you have a ship that performs perfectly well along the entire length of the power speed curve, which is a very difficult thing to attain. And otherwise, as I said, the list is great. We feel that these will be among the proudest crews in the industry, the ones that go on board the ships. Most importantly, our patented Kamsarmax is the first worldwide to prove that IMO's 2050 ambitions for 70% reduction in CO2 emissions target can be met today, even without lowering service speeds. Through the use of biogas mixed with LNG. It's exactly the same molecule, as everybody or almost everybody today knows. There's no difference in the two fuels, unlike, you know, you don't have any blending issues. Other advantages include, well, a hydrogen-ready machinery. Our gas engines are already able to blend LNG with up to 20% hydrogen. You have longer maintenance intervals. You have fewer crew needed with the automation, thanks to Enyram. We can have an engine engine control room, essentially ashore, and control a fleet of ships from ashore with very high-ranking engineers for all the alarm and monitoring. Higher efficiency and higher speed, higher asset utilization because of less downtime, optimized slow steaming because of the power speed curve, and an incredibly increased redundancy in propulsion and electricity. So we have double the propulsion redundancy and quadruple the redundancy in electricity generation on board our ships. And with the variable pitch propellers, then you also have increased maneuverability. So you may also do away with at least one tug in ports. So essentially, all this sums up to lower OPEX and higher returns, coupled by yet unmatched environmental impact.
I'd love to pick out a few of those. I mean, thank you so much. I'd love to pick out just two or three of those points. One of the issues people face with LNG is, of course, it's the energy density per volume is lower by a large factor compared to fuel oil, so you need more fuel tanks. And then there's a payoff against cargo space. How did you manage to overcome that with your design?
Well, that's one of the amazing results of the patented engine room. So by having two smaller volume four-stroke engines, you free up a tremendous volume of space in the engine room, which then you can use differently. At first, we tried a design with an incorporated in the hull LNG tank, which what this meant was instead of consuming deadweight, the tank was actually improving on deadweight because it has positive buoyancy. And then as this became perhaps a cumbersome and possibly more expensive alternative, we looked at different alternatives. And the one that we concluded with being the best is incorporating a C-type tank, in fact, in the engine room compartment. So altogether, you know, what you have is you have a ship that is built with a fuel tank and not a ship that is built around a fuel tank.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. That so many designs one sees, there's a sort of retrofitted C-type tank on the deck with a cofferdam between it and the engine.
And they look very ugly. And a very close friend of mine, Naval Architect, said, he's, of course, Italian. By the way, I'm half Italian as well. So we like styling and we like looks of things. So he said, well, if it doesn't look right, it probably doesn't work right. Most of the designs that I see, they're like if you were to scale down the ships to a model ship, you know, one of that you would put in your bathtub. It's like putting a big, big, heavy, round, cylindrical battery at the back. Well, it doesn't look right. It won't work right.
I think that's a great maxim. Tell me more, if you can, about the power speed curve. Do the vessels have – everybody's slow steaming at the moment in order to save CO2, and the world is generally slowing down, I feel. You know, ships sail more slowly, public transport goes more slowly, Concorde is long gone. In order to be environmentally friendly these days, we just have to do everything more slowly and less efficiently, it seems. So what is the design speed for these ships, or with that power efficiency? Does it mean that you can choose your design speed and be optimized at all speeds?
This is correct. You can choose your design speed. And what is the secret behind the power speed curve optimization that we have achieved? Well, you have two engines. Unlike other cargo ships that have one engine, you cannot really drive it down to 30%, let's say. It will smoke it. That's it. So what we can do with our ship, and especially with this excellent, magnificent engine from Wärtsilä, the DF31, is that we can have only one engine coupled to the propeller, and then that one engine, which is half the power already, so we're at 50%, now we can go at 80% at its optimum MCR, maximum continuous rating, And by doing so, we have 80% of 50%. That's a very slow steaming. Plus, then we can start playing with the pitch and the RPM, which this engine allows us to do because we're using, instead of four engines, two engines for the entire propulsion and electricity for the ship, which means that this engine can really run at low speed, low loads. And LNG is a clean fuel on top of that. So it's great. It doesn't smoke the engine, right, in plain man's terms. So we can really go slow. And this is great because sooner than later, the arrival to ports will be regulated. It won't be the case where we all rush, run to the port where we have to offload or bunker just to pick up a ticket like we used to in the supermarkets. We can just arrive on time, and this will, of course, improve the entire efficiency of the entire shipping chain. And to do that, you may need to slow steam.
Yep. I've done some work myself on optimizing fleets and what it does to the spot market as well, because it takes the troughs and the peaks off the spot market. You have a flatter spot market, but potentially a more predictable and steadier return for people, which can make the ship finance decision from a lender's perspective a little bit easier as well. So although it takes some of the casino element out of the freight market, which may be a disappointment to some of the older gut feel type players in the industry. But you know, the energy transition is coming, and optimization and connected ships are coming anyway. You've made quite clear that you include those elements in the vessel. So the third thing I wanted to pick out was this idea of having, you know, your engine control systems can be onshore. They don't necessarily have to be on the ship. And I can remember not very many years ago, the panic in the industry trying to source LNG engineers, LNG qualified engineers or masters to go on LNG ships when the salaries were skyrocketing into the six figures dollars per year. And, you know, how are we going to man all these crews when we can't get people trained up quickly enough?
Yeah, this is not an issue anymore. You have telemetry taking over, so you can and you have incredible speeds of communication, so you can essentially take over a ship. We're talking about unmanned ships already. I am not a believer of unmanned ships going 100% unmanned, because the sea is ruthless, as we know, so everything corrodes and you need the human hand there to be able to maintain the ships. But going partially unmanned, having an engine control room of specialists ashore, controlling a standardized engine control room, and in fact, engine configuration and everything engine on board a fleet of standardized ships makes all the sense in the world. That means you can reduce your manpower on board by high paid salaried engineers and reduce your operating cost quite substantially. So 10, 15%, maybe even 20 or more percent of your payroll on board can be saved this way.
These design changes are significant then for OPEX on the ships, yeah?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I'm just zooming out a little bit from that sort of technical conversation. I think anyone who's looked at your Twitter feed will have realized that you, our guest Alex, is something of an environmental evangelist. You've probably seen, you know, the Biden victory and the about term we're going to have with the Biden-Harris climate plan that's been publicized now. And he's going to go, he says, in a big way after things like biogas, biomethane. And there is a bill before Congress to increase the bioethanol content of U.S. gasoline, for instance, from 12% to 30%, which would be huge if it happens. So, but are you ever disheartened by the pace of progress to decarbonization? You know, your Project Forward commenced in 2013. 7 years isn't a long time in the energy transition, and we've got 30 years to get to IMO 2050. But do you ever feel that the pace is too slow for you? Were you waiting for the market to come to you?
Well, first of all, Mark, thank you for the title. And yes, I'm not alone in being disheartened. There is a sense of urgency that is lacking. And well, as you called me now, an evangelist, religion aside here, Pope Francis in June issued guidance for carrying out his climate encyclical that include calling on Catholics around the world to divest themselves of investments in fossil fuel companies. Mind you, Biden is a strong Catholic. So with this new sense of urgency put in place, a new 7-year call to action, he put it. So then you have other people of significance, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres. Only a few days ago, he remarked that we are a long way from a carbon neutral world by 2050, and that big emitters must boost national commitments, do much more. And if I may add, at least do something. So really, there's so much greenwashing all around us. And what I can say now, after selling the last of my legacy ships only a few days ago, now free of all conscience issues, is that I can become a ship owner warrior, so to say. The green guy that hopefully will disrupt the system. Having been on more than 100 occasions a speaker and panelist on different fora, what I can now freely say is that extremely few, if any, of my colleagues have a real and genuine intention to do something about the environment and to really move the dial forward. To use a soccer term, the big established operators are throwing the ball outside to gain, or rather offside, to gain time. Discussions on a number of alternative fuels like hydrogen, ammonia, methanol, and other, for now at least, exotic byproduct fuels, or energy sources such as sails, are either impractical and economical or make little to no impact to really lowering emissions from a well-to-wake greenhouse carbon footprint point of view. So why is this happening? Well, the answer is very simple indeed. The legacy companies in our industry are afraid that their ships will become quickly obsolete, and they are trying to push this inescapable and inevitable reality as far down as they can. But as we know, progress cannot be stopped. To put it in practical terms, today you have three options. One, scrub. Two, use distillates. And three, LNG. These are the only three viable and practical and economical options. All, of course, they're more expensive than yesterday, but still practical. Yet, only one uses a fuel that is cheaper than before. That is naturally occurring, not a byproduct, that doesn't need to be produced, and that is widely available without geopolitical influences. That is no other than LNG. There is, of course, a fourth distant and shyly emerging technology, which is nuclear with the molten salt reactors. But it remains to be seen how practical and competitive this will be, how accepted it will become from a regulatory point of view, etc. Let's think for a minute. A lot of people feel negative with anything using what I call the F word, fossil. Imagine the comfort hurdles you have to overcome with the N-word, nuclear.
Yeah.
So, but to add a positive tone here, shipping is moving ahead through self-regulation and its own regulatory bodies by setting itself near impossible emission reduction targets. So initiatives such as IMO's 2050 emission targets, the Poseidon principles, the Sea Cargo Charter, EU's carbon trading scheme, IMO's new and stricter, we expect them to be stricter, EEXI guidelines, all of these accelerate the demand for reliable, transparent, and understandable emissions data, not just from shipping, but throughout the whole supply chain. And we feel that this can only lead to positive territory overall. So while I'm disheartened, I think there's light at the end of the tunnel.
That's good to know, because it's 2050 is quite some way away, but there's so much to be done yet. And I liked what you said earlier that, you know, the LNG engine can also be hydrogen ready as well. So you can add 20% hydrogen into the fuel mix as well. So you, then you gain an extra 20% CO2 saving, because the hydrogen, of course, has no CO2 emission.
Right. And in fact, there's a possibility right now, 20% is proven and tested, but more will be possible, because in the end, hydrogen can be used in a combustion engine.
Yep. There is an argument around, you know, as all the Poseidon principles and IMO 2050 comes on us, and the EU tries to impose its own regulations, and we've yet to see exactly what the Biden presidency will mean for maritime. But there is an argument that says that shipping, being so vital to global trade, should be given a waiver on decarbonization while the low-hanging fruit are picked first, you know, the onshore facilities, the power plants and industry and so on. I think I know the answer to this from our conversation, but what's your view on that?
Yeah, I think you do know the answer. Yeah, it's definitely not. So I don't think that shipping should be given a waiver. Absolutely not. I think that shipping should not be treated differently. We have one Earth, and we have, despite what our friends Elon Musk are saying, we have no alternative. So we're here. We're here to stay. And while it is true that on a per container or on a per ton of cargo moved, shipping is the least polluting part of the delivery chain, it still has huge improvements to make. In this case, I would applaud the EU's environmental leadership with its initiatives on the carbon levy, the Low Carbon Value Chain Alliance, and the Fuel EU Maritime. And it is true that all existing technologies are indeed evolving fast, despite what I said before, from carbon neutral to true zero. Yes, I am a proponent of biogas and LNG, but ammonia, hydrogen, methanol, wind, solar, electrification, composites, biomimetic paints, super streamlining, and others, each one and their combinations are all at play and are significant in the path towards real zero. So shipping needs to understand and digest that its new reality is that the Greta Thunbergs of this world are its new clients. These are the new clients. These are the clients that we are addressing, the Greta Thunbergs. And who knows? Soon, there might be a ship owner, Greta.
There is a thought. Sometimes I think that the Greta Thunbergs think that we shouldn't be trading at all.
Yeah, you're right. But who knows? They're evolving as all politicians, no matter how young or old they are. They are evolving.
Yeah,
I consider Greta a politician.
Alex, we're coming to the end of our time, but I wanted to thank you for a highly engaging, entertaining, and educational half hour. I've certainly learned a lot from this, and I hope that our listeners have enjoyed it too. Thank you so much for coming on, and I take this opportunity to wish you a very merry Western Christmas, and in advance a very merry Orthodox Christmas as well for January.
Thank you very much.
And I hope that you get some peace and some rest over the holiday season. And I hope that 2021 brings forward shipping.
I certainly look forward to use what appropriate word here. I certainly look forward to that, and certainly look forward to a brighter and optimistic 2021. And thank you so much for bringing me on the show. It's been a great, great pleasure for me to be here today. And so keep safe, keep well, keep healthy above all.
Thanks. I echo that to all of our listeners. Stay well, stay safe, and we'll see you in the new year. Thank you all.
Thank you.